The Jason and John Show.
Sports. Paul Feinbaum. You know him. You love him. College football analyst for ESPN. Catch him on the Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN Radio. Let's make him the gigantic interview.
Every weekday on 92.9's Jason and John Show, we have a special guest we call the Gigantic Interview. Presented by A-Team Roofing on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Memphis native Paul Feinbaum, how you holding up, man?
Man, John, that's quite a compliment. I mean, to in my hometown to be honored by whatever that was, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's sponsored, you know. So we got to keep the lights on around here. The last 2 weeks, Paul, it feels like have been a little bit of an inflection point for specifically college football. Whereas the news has tended to be more dire and pessimistic. Whereas we kind of went through the months of May and June, and we've even had you on, the news was a little bit more peachy. What have you made of the last 2 weeks and sort of the direction that college football may be headed in?
Yeah, I mean, I have never seen anything quite like this in terms of the optimism for college football just literally blowing up before our eyes. I mean, three, 4 weeks ago, I mean, you knew there would be some bumps, you know, maybe not get the season started on time, maybe have to adjust. But, I mean, and now, I mean, we're in Titanicville, quite frankly. I mean, the iceberg is literally in front of us, and there may not be any way to dodge it. And yeah, it's no one's fault, except the country, maybe a lot of people's fault, but
yeah.
No one in college football. It's just the fact that the country, especially in the South, has literally gone down the tubes, and it's not getting better. I mean, I know college football administrators are trying all these magic tricks by saying we'll do this, we'll do that, we won't do that, but I'm still not sure how it's going to solve the problem.
Yeah, I guess that's my question for you, Paul. Was, you know, you heard Greg Sankey over the weekend. I think you're going to have him on later on today on your show. But say, you know, it feels like we're running out of time to get things right. My question, Paul, and with where we're looking at, I kind of fear the answer is yes, but have we just run out, period? And is that time already gone? Or do you think this may be straightening up that we've done over the last, we've hopefully done as a nation over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, can get it turned around? What do you think? Is it already too far gone?
Yeah, I think we're close to being too far gone. I mean, by the way, I mean, you know, Sankey has used this asset of timeline quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask him in April, May, June, and now that we're asking him in the middle of July, he can't use that line. I mean, we are already past the point that all reasonable people in college football thought was the deadline. And, I mean, we're now into can the season be salvaged in mid to late September, early October? That's the only thing you're gambling on, is if suddenly you can get numbers to quiet down over the next 4 to 6 weeks. But yeah, the experts say that's not happening. So, in the South, people don't want to be told what to do. So we have the problems that we're having. I'll save the politics for another channel, but
sure.
I think what the SEC is doing today, they're meeting in Birmingham, the ADs, and just to show you how important it is, I mean, they're bringing everybody in. I mean, this isn't let's do another Zoom call. Let's fly everybody to town and sit around a big room and try to figure it out. Now, I'm guessing what they're doing right now is, okay, let's proceed. Let's move to a conference-only plan. Maybe,
right.
Maybe we can have a couple of crossover games. And the reason why that's possible is that, I mean, you have four SEC games in Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, and Georgia, where you're playing Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida, Florida State, games like that. But I think that's right now wishful thinking. And, college football is its own entity, as we've said many, many times. It's not the NFL. It's not the NBA where you can, you know, drop everybody into Orlando. That's why you're seeing the Patriot League, the Ivy League, junior colleges. You're seeing them all bail out right now because they can't afford to have college football right now.
Yeah, we're talking to Paul Feinbaum, absolute legend, Memphis native. Catch him on ESPN, SEC Network. Listen to his show, The Paul Feinbaum Show. So everything you're saying is absolutely on point, Paul. I agree. I do think we're running out of time, and the numbers and the trends, nothing is good. Like, nothing. Maybe if we move everybody to Maine, you know, like, I think the numbers in Maine are pretty low. But by and large, the news is just not good nationwide. But you'll have to forgive me here. Like, the idea that the SEC is not going to play college football this fall, like, you know, like, I'm still sort of in the I'll believe it when I see it camp. Like, I understand that the Patriot League is not going to play. I understand why the Ivy League is not going to play, because it doesn't mean anything, I mean, by and large, right? The SEC is just a total, and, you know, I'll even throw Big 12. Like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of in that I'll believe it when I see it phase. I mean, like, do you really think we're going to look up in November or October and, like, Alabama hasn't, you know, kicked off a football game?
Well, and I think that's why you're not, you know, could be wrong, but I don't think you're going to see the SEC make too many, you know, bold announcements right now about the season. They may announce they're adjusting, but nobody's announcing it's over. And I think some of what you heard from Sankey the other day was a little bit of pushback to this mentality that some of the national networks, including the one I work for, have propagated, is that, you know, the SEC will play if bodies are being carried
right,
out.
Right,
I mean,
right,
care. I mean, there was a show the other day, I think it was PTI, that with the two guys were literally going, like, they don't care. And there, you know, I do think there's some dangerous things happening on college campuses and the SEC and everywhere. I think there is a blatant disregard for treating this thing seriously. You guys have all heard the rumors, and, you know, I mean, the idea that a college football program is trying to attain herd mentality, that it will help them. It may help them. It may not, but it's not going to solve the problem. You still have to deal with the reality of the situation. So I can't imagine it either. I had somebody ask me earlier today in an interview, you know, what will you do if you don't have SEC football? And, you know, guys, those are questions that I refuse to think about right now. If you have, let me know.
No, we don't think about those either.
Paul, do you think Nick Saban in any way is looking in the mirror and saying, should I be out there? You know, because one of the parts about it, right, is just a leader of any team, but you're tough and you want to show great leadership and all that. Do you think has he considered it? And should we be considering coaches' health even more so here? You know, obviously the players and that we've been through that, but I don't know if we're talking enough about the coaches' health and the risk they're at.
We're not, because every time I get pushback, everybody wants to push back and say this is all about people in a nursing home in Camden, New Jersey.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
And I think the first time somebody like that tests positive, it's going to be an awakening. As far as Saban, I think he's thinking about one thing. I've got the best team I've had in years. Mm-hmm. Can we just play this stupid season already? Mm-hmm. I mean, guys like that are built differently. They're wired differently. Yeah. So I don't think he's probably giving it much thought at the moment. But it's going to happen. It's inevitable. I mean, at 3 o'clock today, 4 o'clock today, Saban will be on the practice field for the first time. This is no longer voluntary workouts. You know, is he going to be in a hazmat suit? I don't know. If he is, it would be quite a picture. But, I mean, it's inevitable. This thing is just it's too prevalent out there. It's too pervasive.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people have talked about, you know, the spring, right? Like this thing going to, you know, everybody makes a decision that we're not going to be able to do this thing in the fall. And so spring then becomes, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it's all about the money. If it wasn't about the money, the NBA wouldn't be playing right now. I mean, we know that. We understand the score. We know that some of these athletic departments would go belly up if they don't play, you know, a football season or something close to it. Do you think that the spring is a realistic idea, you know, for these football programs? And how motivated do you think, you know, the majority of you know, college football programs would be to do it and try to pull it off?
I think it's becoming more realistic. Is it a good idea? No, it's a terrible idea. And, you know, assuming that we have any sense of normalcy by the beginning of the year, which is not easy to predict, the idea of college football being played at the same time as everything else, it's hard to imagine. I don't think the appetite will be quite as strong. I mean, there's a reason why college football is great in October. The weather, the scenery, it's just the anticipation. You know, watching Georgia and Alabama play on April 19th, I mean, I don't know about that. And, you know, I'm not even going to bother with the best players are not going to play, because you would be insane
right.
to play if you're one of the top 30 players in the country. There's no upside for it. So you lose the absolute best players in the game, which mm-hmm. does matter, by the way. And you know, you have a bunch of football players who have been sitting around. The one thing it does, though, is if you have to announce on July 31st, you're not having fall football, it gives you something to point toward, and it keeps people interested, and it keeps the media engaged as opposed to saying, we'll see you next July. A year from today, by the way, at Media Days, wherever it's going to be. I mean, that's a remarkable thing. Today is the first day of Media Days on any other calendar, and we're having a conversation about spring football. That's how crazy the world is.
No, it is. It's a crazy place now. Were you surprised, Paul? I've got to get your take on this, to see the Mississippi flag come down as quickly as it did, and then just your take overall on sports' role in that. Obviously, the Mississippi State player, Kylin Hill, had a huge role in that. You know, the people that tell you stick to sports, you know, Hill certainly wasn't taking a page out of that book, and I think most of us are all glad he didn't. What'd you think? Did that come down quicker than you thought it would?
I thought it was fabulous, and I think without Kylin Hill, that flag would still be up.
Wow.
Because what he did, he personalized it. And I remember being, I think it was on First Take the next day, and I was saying, you know, when are we going to hear from this coach? Because, quite frankly, Mike Leach had not said anything. And, you know, the only thing Mike Leach had said prior to that was controversial. By Kylin Hill doing that, he sent a flare-up, get on board, and everybody did, as you saw. And, you know, that legislature down there was not really in the mood for change. You guys talk about it all the time. I mean, there's a reason why politicians are what they are. They listen to what the money people say, and the money people didn't want to do it. But once that happened, and then you got those eight schools and the representatives in Jackson, they had no choice. And it was unbelievable to watch. As somebody who grew up as a kid in the 60s and as a teenager in the 70s in Memphis, Tennessee, to see one young man enact that change. I think Kylin Hill's name will be remembered forever in the SEC and in college football, and he should be remembered and cherished and honored from now until the end of time.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum. Catch him on the SEC Network, ESPN Radio, the Paul Feinbaum Show. A couple other things I wanted to get your thoughts on, Paul, while we have you. We've seen, you know, in the Big Ten, in the Pac-12, and we assume they'll have companies soon in the ACC. They've already gone conference only. I suspect that's what we're just going to see universally, you know, just this year. But my question is this an acceleration of something that we already thought was happening, which was the Power Five sort of pulling away from everybody else and basically just trying to do their own thing? Is this an acceleration of that, and what do you think the ramifications will be, you know, for these Sun Belt teams and these CUSA teams and the smaller leagues as well, who really depend on those bye games to get by?
Yeah, I think it is going to blow up the system. It's done a couple of things. It's exposed the NCAA as being more inept and ineffectual than we even thought possible. I mean, the only thing the NCAA can do is bully schools like Memphis in a situation where they should have just made an accommodation to try to help a young man, to try to help a program. Instead, they essentially shut it down because of their Gestapo tactics. And now it's coming back to roost. The NCAA has virtually no power in this, and I think the Power Five schools they've had enough of them. And I think once they can figure out a model for basketball, they will bankrupt the NCAA, and not a moment too soon.
Wow. Yeah, strong stuff there. Strong stuff there indeed. Hey, Paul, man, we appreciate the time as always.
Thank you,
man.
Paul,
appreciate you as always.
Guys, always enjoy. Be well. Thanks so much.
Yep. He is Paul Feinbaum with some strong words. He is Kevin Blackstone. Follow him on Twitter at Prof Blackstone. Catch him on Around the Horn. Read him at the Washington Post. Eddie joins us now. Kevin, how's it hanging, man? Appreciate the time as always.
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
You know, every day is a grind. You know what I mean? We're just trying to make it to the next one. Is all you can do. So,
but when you do, just go by the Celtic Crossing. That's my favorite bar in Memphis.
Oh, really?
Say hello to Tara, the bartender.
Wow. What sort of brought you there? I mean, I got to hear the story to this.
No, we were just some friends of mine and I. We were hanging out in Memphis last summer, just for a weekend, just guys' night out and weekend out, and Celtic Crossing was one of the places we wound up at. had a great time. Shut it down.
Yeah, it's a great place to watch. It's a great place to watch. Like if you're into, you know, soccer or football, or however you want to, like that's a it's an unbelievable place to. It's what they do best. It's what they do best there. So I know they appreciate the love for sure. All right, a lot to get to, Kevin. Let's sort of start with what's going on in your neck of the woods, which is, you know, the fallout with the Washington organization. And obviously Dan Snyder announced today that I think begrudgingly, like I could almost hear him doing it, you know, gritting his teeth. But he is going to change the name of the team. When you read the statement, what was your first thought?
My first thought was, where's the apology? My second thought was, this is disingenuous because you've still got the letterhead on here with the name just glaring. And my third thought was, what do you have to say about the names that you're considering, given that you haven't even given voice to or given an ear to the native folks of you who you've insulted since buying the team 21 years ago and having an opportunity to do this before. So, you know, I didn't take that much from the letter other than it was the official announcement that they're retiring this name that, you know, I, by the way, grew up with as a fan of the team and as a son of the city.
I guess the follow-up question would be, should we have expected him to do this kicking and screaming after we're talking about a man who said he would never do it? He feels like he's being forced here. Should we have expected this kicking and screaming? I mean, it's the right way to apologize, you and I know, but I don't know if Daniel Snyder realizes that, right? Or that we should expect him to know that, but I don't get the sense that he's, you know, feels that, that need.
No, I mean, he hasn't. I mean, there's nothing altruistic about what's going on. He's being forced at the point of bayonet to change the team. Basically, sponsors, and not individual team sponsors, but sponsors for the team via the NFL, which means now it's just not your pocket, but it's the other 31 owners' pockets that are starting to be hurt. So that's why the move is being made. And, you know, this is a guy who 7 years ago infamously said, you know, he would never change the name and you can put never in caps. Well, never has come home to roost. And he's either got to change the name or he's got to get out of the league.
You know, another part of this statement, Kevin, and it's not a very long statement. I think we're actually giving it more thought than probably they did. but another part of the statement is it says Dan Snyder and Ron Rivera are working closely.
Right.
I'm just curious, like, did that strike you at all? Like, Ron Rivera has sort of been roped into this, and, you know, is this really something that should fall on Ron Rivera to help you sort of correct the mistake?
You're exactly right. Ron Rivera's got nothing to do with this, right? I mean, Ron Rivera just got here a few months ago. And in fact, about a week ago or so when he was asked about it, he deflected and basically said, you know, I'm of another generation. This isn't really the time or place to have this discussion, yada, yada, yada. Then literally like 48, 72 hours later, he's like, he's part of the announcement that they're going to change the name and they're going to do so in a way that honors Native Americans and the military, which has absolutely nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah.
I don't even know how that got in there. So, it's kind of sad to see because I don't know Ron Rivera, but everyone I know in the media who knows Ron Rivera from either Chicago or down with the Panthers says he's a great guy. And now all of a sudden he's having to shoulder the burden of this name change and really is being smeared, I think, in doing so. But you know, that was probably part and parcel of his being hired here. Anyone who's ever been hired here to work for Dan Snyder, if they don't carry his water, they're shown the door. So he has decided to go along, with this entire charade.
School us on this one, Professor. I could really use it. I'm sort of torn on Fred Smith. FedEx's, you know, involvement in this. To one
That's
side
right,
of
your
me,
guy,
of course,
yeah.
And one side of me wants to stand up and applaud Kevin, and say, okay, good thing, right? The investors put the pressure on you guys. You guys put the pressure on. That helped get this right. done. But Jason Fitz, we talked to him a little bit earlier on the show. He made the point, too, that, well, you know, Fred could have done this a while back, too. So you right. know, that he's been partnered with them for a while now. So he could have. So how should we feel, Kevin? Never too late to do the right thing, right? Or, I mean, should we be applauding FedEx, or should we be asking the question, why didn't you do this sooner?
Right. Well, I guess FedEx has been part of this franchise since about 1999. I think that's when they signed their deal for $205 million to put their name on the stadium. I would say this, that the revelation about the origins of the name and the hurt that it has caused the Native American community has been somewhat of an evolution. When I was growing up, I was not aware of it. Mm-hmm. I really didn't start to confront it or it confront me until the 1990s. And I really didn't start writing about it, I would say, until the late 1990s. So I would say that in Fred Smith's case and in FedEx's case, I'm of the understanding that over a year ago, Fred Smith tried to either get out from under this team or buy out this team. Mm-hmm. And possibly in doing so, would change the image and maybe the name of the team. Now, that's what I heard. But I'm going to give him some credit.
Absolutely.
That he, along with the other sponsors, but he in particular, went in and said, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I would like to hear more from Fred Smith.
Sure.
But I'm going to give him credit for at least pushing back, being someone that finally pushed back in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, which caused a reckoning with racial injustice in this country, which caused people to look at imagery like this team, right along with Confederate imagery in this country, right along with Christopher Columbus, and start to say, you know what, we need to rethink these images in our society and get rid of them if, in fact, they are harmful and hurtful.
Yeah, we're talking to Kevin Black at Stone. Catch him on Around the Horn. Read him at the Washington Post. In terms of sort of where this goes from here, you know, the Redskins, I think, probably had the most blatantly, you know, offensive name left in professional sports. But, you know, you still do have the Cleveland Indians. You still do have, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Braves. And obviously, even if the names themselves aren't offensive, there are, you know, the imagery, like you talked about, is there. So where does it go from here? I mean, do you think that, you know, those franchises are now sort of, you know, are their feet going to be held to the fire? I mean, what sort of do you expect, you know, what's the next thing here in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. For a number of years now, I've been working on a film called Imagining the Indian, and you can find it online, imaginingtheindian.com. We are focused on the nickname in this city because I'm from here. The people who are making the film are from here, and it's come to bother us. But we also understand that it's the biggest domino to fall. And once this domino completely falls, the others have to be reckoned with. I think that will happen. This wouldn't be a first, right? There are high schools across this country that have been changing their names away from these images for years now. We know about the colleges who have gotten away from this name. There are even pro teams previous, you know, to like our generations, right, that have gotten away from these names. So this is not a new movement, but this is certainly a movement against the most egregious of these nicknames, and the one that we think, if it falls, all the others will fall too.
How about the Confederate flag in Mississippi coming down? All of this, I ask you that.
How about that?
I ask you all of this to ask you. I'm hopeful that it's real change, right? That it's
Exactly.
That it's not just symbolic. Are you how I guess how high is your optimism level? It does feel like, you know, things are changing in this country. And Kevin, I know you sense this everywhere. Young folks are on fire, man. They want the change. That's
right.
The best thing that really we've got going for us. You optimistic that it's going to lead to great change in our country?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I think you've seen it already, right? I mean, Mississippi was the last state with the Confederate flag on its banner, and that came down. So, and I think you're seeing, to your point about young people, I think they are emboldened as a group.
Yes.
And I think they know that they have the inertia. And I was really impressed by the couple of football players down at Ole Miss who said, you know, we can no longer play football for this state as long as this banner's here. And so I think that carried a lot of weight at an SEC football house too. So I think this time feels different. I think people have had enough.
Yeah.
And I think this is real. I think this is real change in it, and it feels good. But there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of work to be done, you know, obviously all of the NBA is, or at least most of the NBA is down in Orlando. They're in
right.
the bubble now, and now we wait and we cross our fingers and we hope that the protocols are enough and that we can not only start a season but also conclude one. I think, you know, the sports psyche in America is desperate for that to happen. What is sort of your confidence level in that, Kevin? I mean, do you think that the guys are going to be, for the most part, disciplined enough? I mean, we already saw Bruno Caboclo accidentally broke quarantine, and we're in like day one or day two. What sort of is your confidence level? I think like LeBron is going to be hellbent. Like nobody's leaving their room. You know, we're not going off. Like you're not inviting anybody from outside to stay off Instagram. I'm getting number four, damn it. But I worry about sort of everybody else. What sort of is your confidence level in this working?
You know, I'm confident that the NBA is doing everything it can to make sure that this is as safe for their players and their staff as possible. But I'm not confident that it's going to work. I mean, every time you see a gathering of a few people and somebody gets tested and it's in kind of a closed environment, you get positive tests. I mean, Russell Westbrook just tested positive. You know, you look at what happened in the MLS, right? I mean, you had two teams, including the DC United, had to pull out because of all these positive tests. So, and then to have to stay in that bubble and not have it burst for 67 plus days, if you make it all the way to the finals, that's hard. That's hard. And it seems like we learn more and more and forget less and less every day about this virus and how it works. So, you know, if it were me, I would just say shut the season down. You know, just like everybody around the world, 2020 gets an asterisk. we you know, this is a collective mulligan until we figure this thing out. But like you said, you know, it's so ingrained in society. We want to see sports. It brings people together. Yada, yada, yada. It makes us feel good. But while making us feel good, I feel that those guys are guinea pigs, in a sense, right? And so we're just sitting back seeing what happens to them, and then we'll decide what we're going to do after that.
Yeah, no, everything. Yeah.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.